mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, why does the United States continue to fall behind other nations in the annual World Happiness Report? What's making us such an unhappy society? Also this morning, to your health, March is Anal Cancer Awareness Month, an uncomfortable but important topic. Flag City Honor Flight launching its 2025 slate of missions this week with some changes to make the experience even better for the veterans they serve. And it's a big week for Habitat for Humanity, raising the wall on three simultaneous projects to kick off their biggest year of home builds to date. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, March 31st, 2025. Some pretty impressive research that I saw on the Newswire coming out of the Ohio State University, where scientists have invented a new way to tackle water pollution. That's right. The scientists at Ohio State have used titanium dioxide and electrospinning. I don't know what that is, but it's apparently a process. To weave together blankets that break down pollution in water and air using sunlight. We're fighting pollution with these titanium dioxide electrospinned blankets. The creation they have named Nanomats, and it has proved even more efficient when copper is added, and these are lightweight, reusable nanomats. Researchers say the material does not create any dangerous byproducts. It breaks down pollution in water and air using sunlight. That is pretty impressive. I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know what all of the applications might be. I just know that it sounds pretty impressive, and it was created at the Ohio State University. So, kudos. We've solved the pollution problem. Ohio State has solved the pollution problem, apparently. That's the way you want to start on a Monday. Certainly some good news. Not to be outdone, speaking of university research projects, see how you feel about this. Not to be outdone by the Ohio State University scientists, researchers at the University of Notre Dame have found a drug used to treat genetic conditions. It's already out there, already on the market, used to treat genetic conditions, might actually help control mosquitoes. As we're coming up on the spring and summer season, researchers at Notre Dame found that nitisinone, is that how you pronounce it? I have no idea. Nitisinone. Nitisinone. Or nitisinone? I don't know. Anyway, but they found this drug makes human blood deadly to mosquitoes. When mosquitoes consume blood where this drug is in the bloodstream from people who take it, the mosquitoes become paralyzed and die. Apparently, this is a medication that is similar to ivermectin, but researchers found that nitisinone, or whatever it is actually more effective in terms of controlling mosquitoes, and it is approved for use in newborns and children, unlike ivermectin. However, more research is needed, they say, to determine the proper dosage and measure its real-world impact. But it is certainly encouraging research. And I would have to say that of those two research projects, I hate to say it, but I think Notre Dame wins. solving the world's pollution problem, that is important. But if you can figure out a way to control mosquitoes in the spring and summertime, I think you've really stumbled onto something. So, Ohio State may have beaten them on the football field, but in the research lab, I think the score is Notre Dame 1, Ohio State 0. So, I think they're one up on us in the research lab. Let's see. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of incredible science, this is good news for you this morning. Intermittent fasting. You know, that's kind of the big diet trend these days. People doing this intermittent fasting. You'll eat one meal and then not eat at all for an extended period of time. It has been touted as a weight loss tool, but a new study out of Germany now suggests that the intermittent fasting diet could improve your libido as well. Now I've got your attention, right? Study found that intermittent fasting boosted physical desire in male mice. Just in the males, apparently. This could be in the research that they did in the lab. They theorize it is because intermittent fasting helps prevent serotonin release, which results in less sexual inhibition. And while they are quick to point out that it was a test on laboratory mice, not humans, the pathways that are involved in this function similarly between mice and human. For men, this could mean fasting for a portion of the day could provide benefits in more ways than one, if you know what I mean. So. I can hear a lot of guys say, well, that's it. I'm done eating for the day. That's it. That is news you want to start your day with right there. That is good stuff. let's see. A couple of other items here. Spring and summer right around the corner, making your travel plans. If you are planning on visiting a national park at some time during the busy season, which is almost here, some will require a reservation this year. The list of parks requiring reservations to visit this summer include Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, Glacier National Park in Montana, Arches National Park in Utah, and Carlsbad Caverns National Park in New Mexico. Visitors will also need to reserve a spot at the Halakala, or however you pronounce that, the National Park in Hawaii. But I tell you, I even struggle with these pronunciations. Halakala National Park in Hawaii. And the Muir Woods National Monument in California also is going to require visiting. If you plan on exploring, some parks require permits for certain areas, which are an additional charge depending on the permit. Officials recommend checking the National Park Service website before planning your trip this summer. Don't just show up. In years past, you could do that, but they're trying to control, I guess, how many people are visiting and due to staffing concerns and overpopulation concerns, you know, with the impacting the ecosystems in the national parks and all of that. So they're requiring reservations in a number of national parks. So do make note of that. Good to know. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is certainly one of those things that make you go, They may tell you otherwise, but a new study has found that parents do indeed have a favorite child. There's a new study out of Brigham Young University. Looked at the reasons why parents show favoritism, which has been dubbed parental differential treatment. In other words, yes, parents do have a favorite child. Researchers dug through a large set of existing studies that were conducted from August of 2015 through April of 2022, and they found that birth order does play a factor, with the youngest often getting preferential treatment. The youngest child often gets preferential treatment. They found that children are more agreeable and responsible. Children that are more agreeable and responsible also tend to be parents' favorites. In other words, kids who suck up to mom and dad get preferential treatment. And I can hear a lot of people out there saying, I knew it! I knew it! Some of the most interesting, just chew on that this morning, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Statewide, over 23,000 people are without power this morning after a series of severe thunderstorms last night. It came with damaging winds, hail, lightning, and heavy rain. Tornado warnings were issued in multiple counties. The National Weather Service will assess damage and confirm any touchdowns and straight-line wind damage. Temperatures for the first few days of the week are expected to be significantly colder than this past weekend. The system caused damage throughout the Midwest and will target the eastern seaboard today. A man who was convicted of human trafficking charges is set to be sentenced in Cuyahoga County Court today. Danielle Wiggins with ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland reports.
32-year-old DeAndre Inkton pleaded guilty to several charges related to human trafficking and promoting prostitution. Police say Inkton trafficked 8 women and forced them into prostitution. The Ohio Attorney General's office says investigators linked him to more than 4,000 sex advertisements in 12 states, including 2,000 in Ohio.
The Cleveland Cavaliers have hit 60 wins for the third time in franchise history after beating the Los Angeles Clippers 127-122 yesterday. It was a tough month for the Cavs, who played 16 games in the last 29 days and posted an 11-5 record. There are 7 games left in the regular season. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, I don't know if you caught this. The latest edition of the World Happiness Report was recently released, and in it, Finland is again ranked the happiest country in the world. Scandinavian countries in general have long dominated these ratings. Meanwhile, the United States fell to its lowest ever position at number 24. Stephanie Harrison is the internationally recognized happiness expert behind the viral platform and best-selling book, The New Happy. She holds a master's degree in positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, incidentally. And Stephanie, America has kind of been on a downward trajectory in this ranking for several years. Why do you think that is? Do we have a happiness crisis in this country?
I think we do. And I think that, a great deal of what my research has found is that we in America have a very specific understanding of happiness. We are told that there are certain outcomes, certain goals, certain things that we need to do in order to be happy. But what the research shows is that these things don't actually work. And so we think we're pursuing happiness, you know, through things like achievement and power and wealth. But in fact, that doesn't work. It backfires, and it results in a lot of people who are very disconnected from each other and very unhappy.
I was going to ask, is it something that we are doing or something we are not doing which leads to this?
It's a great question. I would say the answer is probably both, to be honest. So things that we are doing involve chasing these kind of material possessions, these external achievements. In many ways, you know, people in the U.S., a lot of people here have to struggle just to survive each and every day, which doesn't provide anyone with the time that is required to invest in the things that do make us happy, which are things like community, strong relationships, being of service to others, acts of kindness, these really pro-social experiences that are what contribute to true and lasting well-being.
I thought it was really interesting, something that you describe as the old happiness problem. Explain what you mean by that we're kind of chasing the wrong kind of happiness.
Yeah, old happy is my term for these messages society has given us about what we need to do in order to be happy. And it really stems around these three core concepts that we're conditioned into. The first is that none of us are worthy or acceptable. And so we have to prove that we're acceptable and worthy through achieving more and more, kind of succeeding in our society and in our culture through these predetermined pathways. And then we also are really told that because of our individualistic culture, we have to do everything by ourselves. We can't ask for help. We're not supposed to lean on people. We don't need other people to help us when we're struggling. And ultimately, these old happy messages end up not just pulling us away from happiness, but actually sending us towards misery.
It's interesting to note, too, that this is not necessarily a uniquely American problem. I noticed Canada also in the latest rankings hit their lowest ranking that they have ever seen. So it seems like, is this more of a Western culture kind of thing?
Yeah, it is. And what the research shows is that individualism and many of these sort of beliefs are really spreading and rising globally, especially as we become more connected and more interdependent upon each other. So we can see that playing out in many ways in other Western countries and even in countries that have different cultures and values. The rise of this sort of individualistic way of thinking about happiness, that it's something that we get for ourselves, by ourselves, is showing up everywhere.
So how do we change that trajectory?
I think the most important thing is recognizing that we can't be happy alone and we should stop pretending that we can be. You know, we need each other deeply. We need one another to support us, to show up for us, to help us, to be in community with us. And the more that we can recognize that we are very, very dependent upon each other and that our well-being results from contributing and caring for that collective, the more that we personally benefit and that collective benefits too. Right now, we're sort of trapped in this idea that, oh, I'm just going to go all alone by myself and go focus on how to be happy, and then I'll come back and help other people once I've got that all sorted out. But that's not how it works. We have to show up for each other right now.
This is kind of the cynic in me coming out here, but I can hear people say this. It all sounds really good, but what is the difference? I guess this is the way to put it. What is the difference between being happy and kind of the way you describe and just looking at the world through rose-colored glasses? The secret to being happy but not naive?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love that you asked it. I mean, I think that the difference is that rose-colored glasses are not really that effective. You know, like, we can try to force ourselves into being positive. We can try to suppress our difficult emotions. We can try and pretend that everything is great, but that actually doesn't really serve our well-being. You know, suppressing emotions is linked with physical ailments, including, you know, cancer and many other diseases. It's not good for us to practice this sort of denial or pretending that things aren't the way that they are. But what is good for us is being able to look at reality and say, this is where we're at. We have a lot of problems. There's a lot of really bad things going on, and we can do something about it if we show up for each other. It's that combination of both reality and then hopefulness, which I think is quite different from that rose-colored glasses Pollyanna-ish lens.
Yeah.
Because hope is something active you do, right? You have to make your hope a reality.
Now, with respect to the World Happiness Report that we referenced, is kind of what triggered this conversation. As many have pointed out, the happiness is very difficult to truly quantify in a report like this. So we should probably take any ranking like the World Happiness Report with something of a grain of salt. As one writer pointed out, Scandinavian countries that typically do well in this ranking also have the highest rate of prescription antidepressants in the world. So it kind of makes you question the methodology, but that kind of misses the point, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important to be mindful and also clear-eyed about the fact that you're right. Like, it's really hard to put a metric to something like happiness. One of my professors in grad school used to say all metrics are flawed. And I think that's a really helpful thing to remember. You know, we're always trying to pin down something that's ultimately very difficult to articulate. And so what we can do is we can try our best. We can learn from, you know, how people are responding to these surveys, how it matches up with the findings that people have, what societal instances are being able to be supportive of that. And then we can adjust and move forward. And, you know, I also think it's really important to recognize that people can experience mental illness or struggles with their mental health, and they can still flourish in life. They can still find a way to live a meaningful and good life. And I think that as, you know, we see so many people struggling with their mental health, it's really important to give people that reminder that there's a very, very strong possibility that you can have a good life, even as you're navigating potential challenges with your well-being.
It is such a good point. At the end of the day, it strikes me that it's not about ranking happiness, it's about achieving happiness.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what I think of the utility of these reports is, okay, great. So what's going well? Where can we use that? Where can we apply that in other contexts? You know, one of the factors that is also really, really important to the World Happiness Report is it's based upon the trust that people have in other people and in their institutions. Mm. And so when we're talking about an individualized country like the United States, where people are actively, you know, pulled away from each other in all of these different contexts, we can then say, okay, so we have a trust problem here. What can we do to fix that? And I think of it more like a diagnostic or something that we can use to assess and then make policy improvements to hopefully help more people to be happy.
Again, Stephanie Harrison is the happiness expert behind the platform and best-selling book, The New Happy. Where do folks learn more about the book and the platform?
The book is available everywhere books are sold. It's called New Happy, and everything else you can find at thenewhappy.com.
Seems like a pretty good way to start. Stephanie Harrison, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And now to your health this morning. This may seem like an uncomfortable topic, but March is Anal Cancer Awareness Month. It is a serious, rare, and misunderstood cancer with a primary risk factor that is much more prevalent than you might think. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, which is a common virus transmitted by skin-to-skin contact. So while it may indeed be uncomfortable, it is important to know about. And joining us this morning are colorectal and anal cancer specialist Dr. Paul Romeser and Lillian Krepel, an anal cancer survivor, co-founder, and executive director of the HPV Cancers Alliance. Dr. Romeser, let me start with you. Talk a little bit about what people need to know about anal cancer and about this connection to HPV.
You know, about 90% of all anal cancers are associated with HPV, or the human papillomavirus. And this is essentially a virus that's very common. Most people who've had sexual intercourse have likely been exposed or infected with the HPV virus. And it's normally our healthy immune system that targets and eliminates this virus from our body before any precancerous changes can occur. But in some people, the immune system fails to do that and the virus can live on, and this can lead to cancer. And in 2024, what we saw is that over 10,000 new cases of anal cancer were diagnosed in the United States alone. And while that may be rare, the cases are rising.
Do we know why the instances are rising? Is there a theory there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of risk factors, and one of which is just that we're seeing people who are exposed to HPV a couple of decades ago, that now we're seeing that this is manifesting as cancer. Mm. And so that's one of the risk factors, is HPV, a history of an HPV infection. Another risk factor would be something like immune suppression, where your immune system isn't quite working as well, either in patients who have something like HIV or other medical conditions. People who smoke are at increased risk. And people who've had prior HPV-associated cancers, like head and neck cancer, cervical cancer, are at increased risk.
Interesting point you bring up, just to underscore this, that the exposure to HPV may predate the onset of cancer by many, many years, even decades. So worth pointing out again and emphasizing. Lillian, talk a little bit about your experience, your cancer journey.
What you just said is exactly what happened with me. I was diagnosed with HPV many years ago. And then fast forward, I was diagnosed 7 years ago with HPV-related anal cancer. I was stage two. But all my life, well, in my 20s, I found out I had HPV, but it comes and goes. It doesn't always show up. Mm-hmm. But at this time, I was diagnosed with anal cancer. And that's why we're doing the work we're doing and partnering with Insight to raise awareness.
Were you aware that you were at risk for anal cancer, or did this come completely out of the blue for you?
It came completely out of the blue. It mimics a hemorrhoid, but other than that, I was fine. Hmm. I had no idea about anal cancer. I knew about cervical, never knew about anal cancer. And actually having that type of cancer, nobody wants to talk about it. I made it my business, to my life's work, to in creating the organization, to reduce the stigma around these type of cancers because they're becoming more common, and nobody should die from these type of cancers.
Dr. Romeser, Lillian mentioned the fact that she really didn't have a whole lot of symptoms that were immediate red flags necessarily. What are some of the common symptoms of anal cancer?
That's a great question. And a lot of the common symptoms actually mimic or mirror, very common things that people get in their daily life, things like hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
So, you know, symptoms to watch out for would be things like pain or bleeding, itchiness, or a change in your bowels and what they look like, or how often you go. And these are symptoms that sometimes people ignore or sometimes people don't want to talk about because they're often not the most comfortable thing to talk about.
Right.
And hey, look, I get that, but these are things that we need to talk about. And I assure you, your doctor wants to hear from you about these things.
What is the treatment and what is the success rate on the treatment? How curable is this?
Treatment and success rate really depends on the exact situation each person's in.
Mm.
But what I can say is that the treatments are rapidly advancing and we've seen really tremendous improvements in outcomes for anal cancer. And there's a lot on the horizon. And so, to me, the best treatment is an early diagnosis, so
right.
We can be aggressive. And again, any of those risk factors that anyone has, please, please, please talk to your doctor. I promise you they want to hear from you.
Yeah. Like any cancer, or really any medical condition, the earlier you catch it, the more successful it can be treated, obviously. And as we always say when we're talking about medical information, your doctor is the best source of information for your specific case. But that being said, Lillian, as we mentioned, you are the co-founder and executive director of the HPV Cancer Alliance. Where can folks go to learn more and kind of get some basic information and basic knowledge on this?
Yes. So they can go to analcancer.com.
March being Anal Cancer Awareness Month, I want to talk about this and bring it sort of out of the shadows, if you will. We will have a link from our webpage as well. Dr. Paul Romeser and Lillian Krepel, the HPV Cancers Alliance. Thank both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Flag City Honor Flight will be launching their 2025 slate of missions this week. It is another big year of flight and some changes to make the experience hopefully even better for the veterans that they serve coming this year. Honor Flight President Steve Schulte is with us on the line this morning. And Steve, thanks very much for taking the time. What is going on here in this final 24 hours before this first flight of the year? I know things are very busy for you today.
Yeah, today's a busy day for us, Chris. We spent yesterday packing up everything at Ohio Logistics to bring up to the airport today.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have another trailer that is going over to Heart Medical today. They have always generously donated 56 wheelchairs for us to take on the flights. So we got a group that's bringing those all up today, and we will be setting up at the hangar. And as you mentioned, we have some changes. We'll be leaving from the Toledo Express Terminal this year.
Yeah, talk a little bit about this, because, again, this is a little bit different than the way it's been done in the past.
Absolutely, yeah. We have historically flown into and out of Baltimore. The prime reason was because it's cheaper than flying into a DCA Reagan Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had, or in the past, we had National Park Police that would give us escorts right down to Washington. Those stopped after COVID. And so what we were finding is we were spending, 2 to 3 hours on the bus getting from Baltimore to D.C. and back during some very busy traffic times. So the board just kind of sat back and said, hey, we just got to kind of bite the bullet. It's going to cost us a little more, but we're going to have a lot better experience if we fly right into DCA. Then we're 5 minutes from the memorials from that airport. So we've made that change at this year. It's going to be a little different, but we think it'll be a much better experience for the veterans and everybody on the trip.
And kudos to all involved for being able to make that happen. That is a big change that should make it a much better day for all involved and an opportunity to probably see more and spend more time at the memorials, given the limited time frame that you have.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a long day, as you know already, but this does give us extra time to spend, you know, at some other memorials. We now for sure can go to the Marine Memorial, the Iwo Jima Memorial, as I like to call it. Sometimes we've not been able to do that because of time constraints. We also are going to be able to spend some time at the Navy Memorial this year.
Wow.
So, again, it just provides us with some extra places to see. And as I've said before, I'm always surprised at how many of the veterans have never just even been to Washington, much less seen the memorials.
Yeah.
So, you know, it gives them a lot better opportunity to see a lot more of Washington, which, again, we think will be a great thing for them.
And this, as we mentioned, is another big year of flights. What, four on the schedule once again this year?
Four again, yep. Our first one's tomorrow. We have one June 3rd, and then we take the summer off because of the heat in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But we have another flight in September and October. So another busy year.
And the demand continues to be there to fill these flights. I do want to talk a little bit about something that I don't know that we have really talked all that much about previously when we've had you with us. Obviously, we talk about the need for continued support to help make these flights happen because there is no charge to the veterans. But one of the other ways that folks can help is by volunteering to be a guardian for those veterans. And I know sometimes family members will step up, but there is always a need for additional folks to volunteer to go along to assist the veterans with their big day.
Yeah, no question. We usually take about 80 veterans, and usually about half have family guardians that want to go with them, which is, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's really neat to have their family be with them. But usually about half of them need what we call the community guardians. And so, yeah, we're very appreciative of anybody in the community that wants to volunteer to do that. It does cost $400 to do that. I always say it's the best $400 you'll ever spend.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's just such a fabulous day. We just actually had our guardian training yesterday. We always have it the Sunday before the flight, about 2 hours, just explaining what all, you know, happens during the day and what their responsibilities are. So, yeah, if anybody wants to do that, flagcityhonorflight.org, you can apply right online. It's very easy to do.
That's what I was going to ask. What is involved in being a guardian for one of the veterans on an honor flight?
Sure. Our biggest issue is, as we always say, safety is the number one concern we have, especially for the veterans and for everybody, but especially for the veterans because of their age.
Yeah.
Our biggest risks are fall risks. There's a lot of steps, a lot of slippery surfaces in D.C., and so we just need to make sure we have guardians that are there to assist the veterans throughout the day, help them. And as we always say, this is the Veterans Day. So you are there to just do whatever they need help with and, you know, help them with their meals, help them with their wheelchairs, et cetera. So the guardian role is very important for the safety of the veterans.
And I know from speaking with folks who have done this in the past, who have gone along on these trips, it is something that you will not soon forget. It is an experience that is, even for people who have been to D.C. before, who have seen all of these memorials, this really is seeing them through a different set of eyes.
There's no question about it. Yeah, I've heard many people say, I've heard a lot of veterans say, we've been there a couple of times, but this was just unique and special because I was with all my brothers and sisters who were in the service with me during that time frame, and you can just see the bond that's there with all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say at the Guardian training, I said, first of all, get some sleep on Monday because Tuesday is an extremely long day.
Yeah.
But you will wake up, I always tell them, Wednesday you'll wake up about noon because it was such a long day, and you will go, wow, you know, now that I've had a chance to think about it, that's one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I would strongly encourage anybody who's interested in being a guardian to do it. Go get signed up.
So kind of take us through what this day is going to encompass. I know, like we said, it starts very early. You actually send the veterans off with a big breakfast and send them out the door. And then what? Kind of take us through the day.
Sure. Well, we cover all of Northwest Ohio, as you know. So we have people coming from the Lima, the Findlay area. We have people coming from Southeast Michigan, et cetera. So the people who are in the southern part of Northwest Ohio, we do have a Bliss bus, provides a bus service from the Cube to mm-hmm. take the veterans and guardians up. So they have to be at the Cube by 4 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
We need people at the airport no later than 5:30. By 5:30, we are boarding the aircraft and are hopefully in the air at 6:30.
Hmm.
So it's a little bit earlier this year because of flying into DCA and the security issues we have to deal with there.
Mm-hmm.
When we get there, again, we will go see the Iwo Jima Memorial. We will then go to the Arlington National Cemetery for the changing of the guard. Honor flights are the only people that can take buses to the changing of the guard, and we have to go through the Army to get a specific time to do that. So we do that. We then go to the Navy Memorial. We drive by the Air Force Memorial. We have lunch at the Navy Memorial. Then the rest of the afternoon we spend at the three major memorials for the Korea, yeah. World War II, and Vietnam people.
Yeah.
We eat dinner at the Women's Military Memorial. And then we're back at DCA and in the air by 8 o'clock and hopefully back at the Grand Air Terminal in Toledo at 9 o'clock.
And
so, long day.
And there's usually a big welcome home for the veterans when you re-arrive at Toledo Express.
Yeah, there's usually around 1,000 people there.
Wow.
It is really an impressive thing. And I again, also encourage people to go up there and see that. As I always say, it's patriotism at its best. It's open to anybody, the public, the families. The doors open at 7 o'clock at the Grand Air Hangar. Again, we hope to be arriving around 9:30, somewhere in that time frame. And it's really a great celebration afterwards.
Doing it four times again in 2025 with some improvements to make the day go a little bit smoother for all of the veterans. And again, Flag City Honor Flight always in need of the support of the community, both financially and in terms of volunteer guardians. Where do folks get more information?
Once again, the easiest place is www.flagcityhonorflight.org. You can apply as a veteran, a guardian, et cetera, on there, and all our other information and the dates of the flights, et cetera, are all there.
Again, Flag City Honor Flight President Steve Schult with us this morning. We'll let you go and get back to it because I know, like we said, it's a big day actually for you today in making all of the preparations for tomorrow's flight. But Steve, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Christopher Marlowe was arrested in Palm Bay, Florida for trespassing recently. I don't know exactly when this happened. I believe it was last week sometime, but body camera footage shows Mr. Marlowe had on a red and white striped shirt, a yellow vest, and a red nose. Basically, he looked like Ronald McDonald, except with a skull logo on his shirt where the golden arches would otherwise be. In the video, the arresting officer can be heard telling him, "You look like a clown." To which he replied, "I am a clown." "You look like a clown." "I am a clown." And apparently he wasn't lying because a search of the bag he was carrying turned up additional costumes and 10 more red noses. "I am a clown." Oh, man, the criminals in Florida are the best. They really are. They're just in a league of their own. I am a clown. Elsewhere in the broken news from the International File, the Animal Kingdom, the International File, researchers at the University of Auckland recently captured video footage of a shark swimming with a funny orange hat off the coast of New Zealand. But what was the orange object? I mean, one would assume that, you know, sharks don't typically wear hats. One of the best things about being a marine scientist is that you never know what you might see, according to Rochelle Constantine, one of the researchers that captured the video. As it turns out, the orange hat was actually an octopus hitching a ride on the back of the shark. We really don't know how this octopus that lives on the seabed came across this 10-foot-long Mako shark, Ms. Constantine said. Researchers noticed that the shark did not seem to be bothered by its companion, and the octopus itself was alive and well. So, little shark Uber there going on. I don't know, just weird. I haven't seen the video, but it's got to be weird to see a shark swimming through the ocean with a big orange octopus on its back. Although, I guess that would make them much easier to spot in the open sea, you know, for swimmers. Maybe that would be good. A couple of other items here in the broken news. Back to the domestic side of things. Joseph Ross from Milwaukee has been charged with placing foreign objects in his co-worker's drink. This is a wild story. The victim, whose name was not given, suspected that the Coca-Cola she was drinking had been tampered with when she noticed a funny taste and a chemical smell. She says she then installed a camera and captured Mr. Ross allegedly pouring super glue into her drink. Yikes! Yikes! Obviously, the police were called, and when questioned by the cops, Mr. Ross reportedly confessed to adding what he called a supplement to his co-worker's drink. A supplement. A search of Mr. Ross's office uncovered a wadded ball of superglue. Authorities called the incident alarming. Alarming, they said. That is maybe the understatement of the day. It was alarming. Man. Be careful around your coworkers. The moral of that story. That is crazy. Speaking of strange things in people's drinks, Jessica Simpson makes the broken news. You know the singer, Jessica Simpson. She apparently revealed on social media that before she performs her concerts, she drinks a specialty elixir that was recommended by her vocal coach to sort of, loosen up her vocal cords and allow her to sing without straining her voice. What's crazy about this special elixir that was recommended by her vocal coach, one of the ingredients is snake sperm. I kid you not, that is one of the ingredients. Snake sperm. The musician likened the drink to honey and said she was unaware of its contents until a friend looked up the ingredients list. Here's the thing, though. I mean, that's crazy and a little bit gross and nauseating. Why would you publicly admit that? I mean, if I had been drinking something that turned out to contain snake sperm, the last thing I would do would be to go on social media and tell the world about it. Why would you even want all of the comments that would come along with that? No, thank you. But she apparently let the whole world know. Fucking snake sperm. Weird. And finally, in the broken news this morning, and this is a great story. I love stories with a happy ending. A little bit crazy, though. Never doubt the hardiness of the wiener dog. There's a news report from The Guardian. A miniature dachshund has survived for over 16 months in the wilds of South Australia's Kangaroo Island after getting loose from her owners. Valerie, a 9-pound miniature doxy, went missing in November of 2023. And now here we are a year and a half later, and the Kangala Wildlife Rescue reports that first-hand accounts and video indicate that Valerie, the wiener dog, is alive and kicking and appears to be doing just fine. She apparently has a lot of energy. She's doing just great. She runs at the first sign of humans or vehicles. And despite the best efforts of dedicated island locals, Valerie has been impossible to catch. They can see her. She's on video. They know she's out there. She's doing fine, apparently. But she has no interest in getting caught. Valerie's improbable survival tale was especially surprising to her owner, Georgia Gardner, who describes Valerie as an absolute little princess who never left my side, Ms. Gardner says. Is that the crazy thing is that she was never a very outside, rough and tumble dog. She never really wanted to go outside very often. And to think that she even went out one night and disappeared in the rain, no less. She was just stunned to learn that Valerie is not only alive, but is thriving in the wild, apparently. So, I mean, it's good, and this dog definitely had having her day, a dog having her day. No word on whether she'll ever have to be rescued and returned to her owner. That's crazy. But glad to know that she's okay, at least. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever thought about joining the Findlay Rotary Club?
I'm Scott Holman, president of Resolute Wealth Advisor, and I'm proud to be a Findlay Rotarian where collectively we rely on the strengths of each member to impact our club's vision of uniting local leaders to influence positive change.
Our ability to influence positive change locally and around the world grows through membership. To learn more about how you could join the Findlay Rotary Club, go to findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now, your daily download. The numbers behind the news, the statistics that shape our lives. Would you swap where you live for your favorite TV home? It turns out nearly half of Americans say they would trade their current living situation, their current home, if it meant that they could live in their favorite TV home instead. There's a new Talker research survey found 48% overall, 48% would give up their home to enjoy some silver screen surroundings, if you will. The Tanner family's Victorian home from Full House topped the list of the most yearned for homes, I guess you, if you will. The Full House home would be number one on the list that people would trade their own home for. The Banks mansion from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was second. And that would be an easy sell, to live in a mansion in Bel-Air. Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting. The Miami home of the Golden Girls rounded out the top three, which in reality, the home that was used on screen as the Golden Girls home was not actually in Miami. I think it was in California someplace, but supposedly in Miami, and that's probably the biggest attraction to that, to live someplace, in, you know, sun and fun. Monica's apartment in Friends and the Bridgerton mansion round out the top five, if you're a fan of that show on Netflix. Other popular homes to make the top 20 include the Brady Bunch House at number 6. So just outside the top 5 is the Brady Bunch House. Tony Soprano's New Jersey mansion. The Simpsons home in Springfield, which I thought was kind of interesting because it's not even real. And yet was among the top 20 homes that people would trade their own home for. The Arconia building featured in Only Murders in the Building, the Hulu TV show. And the Arconia, of course, is a fictional apartment building in New York City. Only Murders in the Building. I'm not sure. You know, I've watched that show, and I'm not sure that I would want to live in a building where so many murders take place. Then, of course, the White House was on the list of, you know, homes that we would trade our own homes for if we live in the White House. That from the TV show Veep. So the White House. Okay. Willingness to swap one's own home for a TV home actually depends on your age, as it turns out. The older we are, the less willing we are part with our current home. 64% of Gen Zers and 59% of millennials would say yes, they would trade their current home for their favorite TV home. And they see their TV home as their dream home, as opposed to where they're living now, which kind of makes sense. Younger folks are probably living in starter homes and, you know, probably not as nice as the homes that they see on TV. On the other hand, 52% of Gen Xers would trade their home for their favorite TV home, and just 37% of baby boomers would be willing to do so. As I mentioned earlier, it is a big week for Habitat for Humanity of Findlay and Hancock County, raising the wall on not one, not two, but 3 simultaneous projects to kick off their biggest year of home builds to date. And Wendy McCormick from Habitat is with us this morning. I'm wondering, at one point, did you say, what were we thinking? 3... Three simultaneous builds.
Well, I have an amazing team that when I come to them with big dreams, they're like, we'll make it happen. So, and God's always on our side. So, but it's here and we're ready and we're so excited.
It is a very aggressive schedule this year. Why? What made you decide that you were going to go all out?
Well, like this? 25th anniversary, number one. Number right. two, the biggest need in our community is single-family homes mm-hmm. That are priced below $200,000.
Overall, not just for Habitat recipients.
Overall.
But overall.
That's according to our latest housing study. Yeah. So, and rentals are at a 99.6% occupancy rate, which is full. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing out there for families who are hardworking. And so we're getting 150 to 200 applications a year, which speaks to the need. Mm-hmm. And so what can we do? So build more.
It's interesting you bring up those data points because in talking with us, I mean, I think a lot of us in the audience, myself included, we have a home that we own that we are happy with and raising or have raised a family. And so when we hear anecdotally people say, gee, there's just nothing out there, that's, like I said, we hear that anecdotally, but the data shows that there really is nothing out there.
Yes, it's very quite little. Trying for individuals to try and get started a starter home, get mm-hmm. into that down payment, and then interest rates, and not to mention just overall availability of stock.
Right.
So we're trying to increase that housing stock.
So it is a very aggressive timeline through 2025. As you mentioned, it is the 25th anniversary, so that is a big deal. The Raising the Wall event for these 3 that'll be going on simultaneously is happening tomorrow.
Right? Yes, we invite the public out to see this once-in-a-lifetime event for us. We're so excited.
Well, and once-in-a-lifetime to this point, who knows what the future may hold.
You're correct. You're correct. Kicking off our biggest build year yet. So tomorrow we'll be in our new neighborhood, the Crystal Ridge Edition. Mm-hmm. That's where these three next homes are going. We'll build three more this fall, so we will be back again. Mm-hmm. And we're in the 1700 block of Bishop Lane. And we kick off at 5:30 with a short program and a blessing from Pastor Kirk from College First Church. And our three families will be there. So you can actually hear from our three families. And then we'll do the big countdown. And the three families and their families will actually raise those first walls.
Yeah. You mentioned that all of these will be in your new dedicated neighborhood. How important is that? I mean, looking back, and I remember talking about this when this was kind of in the works, and you were, again, talking sort of in the abstract about how significant this is, but clearly this probably would not be able to be done were it not for having that specific location to do all of these.
We had to scale up the team as it was, because not only does this team oversee new construction, they also oversee critical home repairs. Mm-hmm. So our construction team is talented. They're unique. They keep volunteers safe and train the volunteers how to do all this work. So they're pretty special. And so we really had to ramp up. We would have really had to increase resources significantly to build across town from each other. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, we've been able to gain some efficiencies, both with subcontractor partnerships and being right here in the neighborhood to be able to keep it affordable for
us. Which helps out both the organization and the partner families, I would imagine.
Absolutely. With increased cost of labor, material, and such, it's been a challenge to keep these homes affordable for families. So our board has gotten creative, and we've been able to manage.
That's interesting, and probably a whole different conversation, the fact that these are becoming more challenging to keep affordable, even for the mission of making affordable homes that you do. I mean, you know.
Yeah, if it wasn't for 225 volunteers on each one of these homes, I'm not sure we could do it.
Yeah. So what is the timeline on these builds? I mean, again, you raise the wall tomorrow. How long will it be before these families are able to move into these homes?
Sure. We have a 10-week build schedule for all three homes.
Pretty aggressive.
Two of them will be going side by side simultaneously, and then there'll be one that'll be on a 2-week stagger. But all three homes will be completed at the same time, and we invite you out to tour all three. See the three projects on June 10th, and that's when the families will receive the keys to their home.
So they'll be in time for all of those all of those summer memories.
Summer fun.
That is terrific. Obviously, I'm guessing that with these three homes, the volunteers who will make them happen are all kind of lined up, but you've got more obviously coming through the course of the year, so volunteers always needed.
There's a few spots. There was a few spots today. If you want to come out in the rain and the mud, we'll welcome you. We're finishing all the decks and foundations today on all three homes, but you can show up. We'll put you to work, but that's unusual. We are booked for the spring for the most part, but we have the fall schedule in place. That launches early August and will go through September. So reach out to volunteer at habitatfinley.org or 419-429-1400, and we'll get you signed up.
And real quickly, you mentioned that there are a huge number of applicants for future homes. What happens to those applicants? I mean, because obviously you can't build 100 homes in a year's time or even 2 years' time. What happens to those applicants while they are waiting?
Well, we have an open application period, so anybody can apply at any time. If you'd like to join us at Habitat, we'd welcome you to go to habitatfinley.org and fill out the application. Once you fill out the application, you get partnered with our Financial Opportunity Center coaches because you're applying for a zero-interest loan with Habitat. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make sure you're loan ready. So that includes helping you pay down debts, making sure your income's in the right spot. And some families are on a 2 to 3 year journey with us for that. Some families choose not to complete that journey that apply, and we understand that, and they might not quite be ready for that. Mm-hmm. And we just work with the ones when they become ready and get them in line for the next homes.
like you mentioned, this is a process that includes a lot of financial education, and clearly you are doing something right, because we've mentioned it in the past, and it bears repeating, the foreclosure rate right. On Habitat homes is zero, and you're not giving homes to people. They are paying for them. Foreclosure rate is zero.
That is correct, and our families work really, really hard. They're very proud of what they've been able to work to build themselves through mm-hmm. their 400 hours of sweat equity. And they pay that mortgage payment back to Habitat. And there's something about knowing that you're helping the next family with each one of those payments. They've all been on that journey. They've all known where they're going. And we are so proud of the Wire family, home number 15. They'll be there tomorrow night, too, and we're going to actually burn their mortgage.
Wow.
So they have completely paid off their mortgage 4 years early.
Awesome.
And we're so excited for her.
How cool is that, to not just pay off the mortgage, but pay it off 4 years early?
Yeah. She is just a wonderful individual, and she's had lots of family support. And it takes a village to get you to this point. But she's going to be there to wish the families well on their journey as she is completing hers.
That's awesome. Clearly great work being done in the community by Habitat for Humanity of Findlay and Hancock County. And again, the raising the wall for all three of those homes that will be next to go up is tomorrow. Give us all the details.
Sure. Please join us. 1700 Block of Bishop Lane in the Crystal Ridge neighborhood. Please, you probably want to come a little bit early. The parking's on the street, so you might have to walk a little ways.
Okay.
We kick off the program at 5:30, and those walls will be up by 6, so it's a short evening, and you can get on to your family dinner after that.
Very cool. Again, Wendy McCormick with Habitat of Findlay and Hancock County. Wendy, thanks very much for dropping
by.
We appreciate it. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the measles outbreak that has taken hold in other states has now reached Ohio, with the first case reported late last week as nearby as Allen County. We'll speak with the vice president of the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease about the attitudes toward public health that are driving it. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.